Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abell. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. How are you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Okay. It's time for another poem, and we're moving this week to the face. Remind our listeners about a fellow by the name of Charles Bell, perhaps best known by his disease that he described called Bell's palsy. Bell was the first one to describe the anatomy and the function of the facial nerve in the mid-1800s. Bell's description of a facial palsy in the literature was enough to allow us to identify what's now commonly referred to as Bell's palsy. It is obviously an acute facial palsy. It can be devastating for patients, not only physiologically, but also socially. A lot of psychological distress, and lots of these patients report that they have to restrict social activities because of their own perceptions of feeling awkward. About half of all cases of the broad category called facial palsy qualify as Bell's palsy. It is defined as an acute peripheral facial palsy of unknown cause. Now, the incidence is somewhere around 20 cases per 100,000 population. And unlike some of the diseases we've talked about recently, as far as I could determine, there is no race or geographic or gender predilection. Although, interestingly, Bell's palsy is about three times more common during pregnancy than at any other time of life. Lots of theories about what causes it. I think the accepted thinking right now is that it's due to a herpes simplex-mediated viral inflammatory immune mechanism. In most cases, PCR testing supports that notion of some sort of axonal spread and multiplication of this reactivated herpes simplex virus, which then causes inflammation and demyelinization and palsy. Interestingly, clinically, this usually presents with a sudden onset, usually over the course of hours, of a unilateral facial paralysis. So these patients end up with this paralysis. It feels funny. It looks funny. They come to see their doctor. And the big question for us is, what do we do? So in the medical literature, there's been lots of debate about steroids and antiviral agents. Mark, you found an article this week from JAMA that answers the question, are both corticosteroids and antiviral agents beneficial in the treatment of uncomplicated Bell's palsy? What conclusion did they come to?
Well, I wish I could say they definitively settled this. I really was looking for that, but I don't want to mislead you. There's still, I think, a little bit of room for discussion and debate. But let's go over what they did. They did a meta-analysis and they did a good search of not only Medline but conference proceedings, and they talked to experts and they looked in the bibliographies of studies that they found, and they did all the things you should do to make sure you found every relevant study. And they found a total of 18 studies with about 2,800 patients that met their inclusion criteria for being randomized double-blinded controlled trials. Of those studies, 8 looked at steroids and 7 looked at antivirals and 3 looked at both. Follow-up was for a median of 6 months, and most of the studies were of moderate to high quality. When they looked at steroids alone compared to placebo, they significantly reduced the risk of an unsatisfactory facial recovery. And that's really the poem we're worried about, is what am I going to look like 6 months later or a year later? And the number needed to treat was only 11 to prevent the one bad outcome. It also reduced the likelihood of some autonomic dysfunction. NNT was 7 there. And higher doses were significantly better. And really, you needed to give at least 450 milligrams total dose of steroids. So, for example, some of the studies used 25 twice a day for 10 days for a total of 500 milligrams, and that would be, according to them, enough. Antivirals alone were not significantly better than placebo. Now, they found, 8 studies where they compared antivirals plus steroids with steroids alone. and there they found maybe borderline benefit. So antivirals against just placebo didn't work, but if you had them combined with steroids versus steroids alone, there may be a benefit. Now, I sort of looked more deeply in, you know, at the data, and they had one of these, you know, complicated-looking systematic review meta-analysis kind of diagrams. And when you look at it, there are four really tiny studies that only had 30, 40, 50, 60 people in them. So four studies were quite small. There were four that were a little bigger. And if you look at those four larger studies, one of them showed no benefit. Actually, none of them, and let me back up a little bit, none of the eight individual studies showed a statistically significant benefit or harm of adding an antiviral to a steroid. None of them. Now, when you combined all eight, you found this borderline effect. The relative risk was 0.75. The confidence interval was 0.56 to 1.0. So it's just barely touching that 1.0 line, and maybe it's barely significant. But if you look at each study and look at the biggest studies and the best design studies, one of the best studies I know of was published in the New England Journal 2007. They had 550 patients. They found no benefit of adding acyclovir to prednisolone. So I'm still, you know, really question the benefit here. And, you know, I think this suggests there may possibly be a benefit, but I don't think it's the final word.
In any case, we ought to be using steroids, it sounds
Absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely, yeah, that's a no-brainer. Yep.
Right, so with the steroids, any indication that any one steroid, prednisone versus prednisolone, et cetera, is any better?
No, there wasn't. They didn't see any difference, and it was more a dose-related, and you know, you wanted an equivalent of 450 milligrams or more. I guess, you know, you always think about this, well, what if I came down with it? And what would I do? And I'd probably go ahead and take acyclovir. It's relatively inexpensive, relatively safe, been around a long time, and I'm not too concerned about the harms or the cost. And you know, if there's a possible benefit, and this could be a life-altering disability, then, you know, yeah, I think I'd probably do it. I wish we'd have a little bit more definitive answer.
Now, with lots of medicines, particularly in the infectious arena, we know that the sooner you start, the better the outcome. And I'm assuming because this is an inflammatory process that the same would hold true. You know, you don't want to delay at least starting that prednisone as soon as you can.
Yeah, generally you'd want to start these agents within 36 to 48 hours. And generally with something like this, patients come in right away. I mean, they're not sitting around wondering if their sniffles are going to get better with something like this. They're in pretty quickly usually.
Right. No, it's a scary phenomenon for them.
Yeah.
Well, good. This has been very helpful. Thanks, Mark. I look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right. See you then.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.